video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two at the races. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And it is a full docket. Sid Fernando, good morning. Oh, no Sid yet. All right. We'll get him. Got Sid? Oh, no, he's there. He should be there. Sid. Case, baby. Yeah. There we go. There's Sid. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Can you hear me?
I can. I don't know. I couldn't hear you before.
Yes.
We're good.
Yeah. How are you doing?
All right. I took that call. The timing was good that they called, but then the guy launches into a... He says, am I calling at a bad time? I said, I don't know. You've got 2.5 minutes. Well, I have to go through this with you. And I'm like, well, then you did call it a bad time. I said, I'm on the radio. I'm doing my show. Oh, my God, sorry to bother you. That's all right. But if you've got something that's going to take more than 2 minutes, I got to call you back. That's pretty funny. So, yeah, I've got to have another. I'm not thrilled. They're going to do another. Whatever.
This line isn't very clear for me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah.
Okay. Good. All right.
Yeah. Well, I'll know more. I'll know more later. Let's, Sid. Let's dive in and. Let's start with this Derby result that was remarkable, eye-popping, head-spinning, improbable, magical.
Yeah, all of the above, no question. Really, really pretty amazing. You know, it's funny because I had given you my pick. Last week, I said, you know, who I gave you were, I said, you know, I really feel like it's going to be a first crop sire thing. Of course, it was with Secret Oath. But the horse, it was Gunrunner and Kaba that I was really expecting to be the first crop sire. Of course, when you and I spoke, this horse wasn't even in the field, but...
That's right.
It's so funny how he got in, and he's also a son of the first crop sire, and he won. It's really quite remarkable how the first crop divorces, you know, do so well. And we've talked about it for years. It's just a phenomenon, you know. And once again, it happened in as you pointed out, in the most unlikeliest of circumstances and ways, you know, getting into the race. Way the race developed, a trip to jock took. I mean, it was just everything you just said.
And at the same time, Sid, as you know, improbable as it feels, when you kind of dive into it, it really the pedigree and how this horse was made up and is made up, it does fit. One of those familiar themes that you touch on regularly, which is, and which actually I mentioned on Monday, or maybe yesterday, the idea about the piece you wrote on Donegal and their interest in stamina, and that stamina equals grass, equals turf. Here's keen ice, and you know, a turfy pedigree. That equates to stamina, and here's a horse, first time going the mile and a quarter, that, you know, was finishing better than anybody, You fold in, obviously we'll talk about the Canadian family and the smart strike. But this, by all rights, if it wasn't the 80-1, and if it wasn't, you know, low-profile connections, and a 30 claimer, quote-unquote, this would not be, you know, that outlandish of a pedigree at a glance.
Well, it's not so much that it's an outlandish pedigree, but as I mentioned in my column on it's out in TDN today, in today's paper, it's a horse, well, as you pointed out, the Donegal horse, you know, this is a horse that we shortlisted for Donegal, Keen Ice, that is, and you know, it was a horse, when we'd done the analysis years ago, had a ton of stamina in him, and that's the type of horse that Jerry Crawford liked, and you know, that's how that horse ran too. They had really a ton of stamina in him, and the one place that actually took a shot with him to stand him a stud is another outfit that really goes overboard with stamina, and that's Calumet Farm. They love very much against the grain of the commercial marketplace, horses with incredible amounts of stamina. And, of course, you know, their best stallion was English Channel, a son of Smart Strike, just like Curlin is a son of Smart Strike. That was there. They loved that sire line, too, you know. So they took a shot on this horse. And they, what did they do? They bred a Canadian champion, Oaks winner, who'd also run third in the Queen's Plate against Colt. You know, a mare that had a lot of stamina in her pedigree, that bred her to a stamina horse, that, which is not the type of breeding that you normally, that normally takes place, which is you try to breed a little speedier, quicker mare to a horse with that much stamina, but they just went ahead and put another stamina mare to the stamina stallion. Not only that, but the inbreeding 3x2 to Smart Strike, who, you know, who's a transmitter of stamina. There's a heck of a lot of stamina in this horse's pedigree, and I would say, even under the best case scenarios, that it was almost too much stamina. But the way this race developed with that 21 change first quarter, it played to his stamina. And so it was, you know, just everything aligned from the point of the horse getting into the race to the way that speed that, you know, we had talked about, we really thought there was going to be a pretty rapid pace in this race. It was even more rapid than, you know, I had anticipated. And it really played to a horse that does have stamina because of that. And of course, you know, who could predict the way this horse, A, gets into the race, and then the kind of rowdy chase, and he had the stamina, you know, and that showed at the end. But I would say this horse, in a normal year, might have had too much stamina to play. But it turned out that everything played to his strength.
In this particular case, because of when you use figures, and in all the conversations that, you know, we typically have leading into derbies, you know, this is where the proviso about, you know, horses that appear too slow to impact this particular race at this time of year, this is where, said so often, when we say about, you know, getting the distance, this was really a poster horse for that scenario, a horse that looked too slow, looked like a horse running high 80s buyers and you know, could potentially tick into maybe the 90s. But when you talk the mile and a quarter, and very frequently you talk about, you know, running nice, even 24 second and change quarters, one paced, when you've got stamina and you run essentially what the second fastest quarter of his five was the last quarter. I think the second quarter was the only quarter he ran faster than his final quarter. And that was also that part of the ride hasn't even been discussed really with Sonny Leone. He had to ask this horse a little bit in that second quarter to keep pace, and he did that effectively, because if he doesn't, the horse probably drops a little too far out of it to then overhaul the leaders late.
Yeah, no, it's really true. You know, it's very similar to Mo Donegal, too, because, again, the other Donegal, you know, Crawford Torres, I was worried that he might not have, you know, it might be, he might have a little too much stamina for this race. The two of them were very much in line for most of the race, but one went through the inside and the other one to the outside. And, both those horses, again, because we're familiar with the Donegal profile, they're very similar types in that way. And the one that got the real nice, great trip on the inside, was the one that won the race. The other horse has Mo Donegal, you know, fan wide and typical type of, you know, closer run from the outside. Where, you know, didn't have the the benefit of it. But yeah, in both those cases, I thought that Mo Donegal, had you could almost switch them. If he had been in this position, you know, it could have been him that won. The general point is exactly what you said, that the stamina showed in this case, but a lot of things had to take place for that, in my opinion, and one of them was that, you know, a really brutal first quarter, you know, half to 45. You need the early pace for these types of horses. And it's funny because I think I saw somewhere on Twitter somebody mentioned pacemakers. You know, this is why they use pacemakers in Europe, you know, for these types of horses. They want to truly run race, and they create their own early pace with these pacemakers. We don't use them here, especially not much anymore, not much on dirt, but in essence, that's the type of a race structure that you need for a big closure like this. Of course, you need the luck in a 20-horse field to get clear, and again, you know, everything just kind of opened up with the athleticism of the horse and the inspired ride of Sonny Leone, you know.
To that point, Sid, and I'll take a screenshot of the incremental chart, and I'll so people can look at it. But Mo Donegal and Rich Strike literally ran the identical, just like you said, identical race, except for Sonny Leone's decision to stay in the inside paths and the Rat Ortiz having to go wide. And to these are the comparative quarters. Rich Strike, 24.72 in the first. Mo Donegal, 24.82 in the first. Second quarter, Rich Strike, 23.51. Mo Donegal, 23.39. They ran identical third quarters, 24.08. In the fourth quarter, 25.46 for Rich Strike, 25.40 for Mo Donegal. And then 24.83 last quarter for Rich Strike, 25.56 for Mo Donegal. That's basically four-fifths of a second. In other words, four lengths, which is exactly what Rich Strike beat Mo Donegal by. The ground loss, the absolute difference. For those that have been listening, and there's, you know, the reason you spend so much time on this and go back to this and dissect this is because this race, as much as any all year long, will be instructive about how races are run and how races can be won. And this one is going to go down in history because of that Sonny Leone ride. I mean, every Derby goes down in history. But this one goes down because of Sonny Leone's ride, and that if he had done anything differently and lost a length or more at any point, then Epicenter probably wins. If Mo Donegal saves some ground and Sonny loses some, Mo Donegal could have won. And those that heard Antonio Seno say, with a couple of different wrinkles, simplification could have won, he's right too. I mean, this is going to be such a fun, you know. Maybe Marshall will use this as a, you know, instructive thing about geometry and the way in which, you know, the way around the racetrack makes all the difference.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. 2 weeks ago, I wrote about Mo Donegal and Gary Crawford, and my last line was something to the effect that Mo Donegal will be closing at the end for the race that Gary Crawford strives to win. Hopefully he gets there in time, and that proved to be the case. For him. And just that, you know, what we just discussed, those two routes at the very end were the difference.
Amazing. And looking at the pedigree too, I said, let's pick out a couple of highlights, and then we'll talk about what his value might be, who might be interested in him as a stallion, and what else he's going to have to do in a long term. But the Smart Strike 3x2 is pretty stunning. And of course, Keen Ice himself, 3x3 deputy minister. You've got a ton of Raisin Native in here with Search for Gold, who's the son of Raisin Native, that is the sire of Panning for Gold, the third dam. You've got, what else? Gold Digger as well, right? Because of, yep, the full brothers, Search for Gold and Gold Digger, right? Who else? Dixieland Brass up close, sire of the second dam. Anything else in here that people should see?
Yeah, the first thing is, this horse went to stud, and its stud fee was $20,000. That was way, way more than what anybody really would have wanted to pay for that horse. Even though it got a ton of mares in the first year, I believe Calumet pretty much, was invested in putting most of those mares to him. The fact that they put a, and this is another reason, by the way, why people look at First Crop, because get a horse like Keen Ice, and then you get a dam who is a $230,000 purchase, who'd already produced a graded stakes winner. She herself was a Canadian champion and a Canadian Classic winner. A mare like that that goes to a stallion like Keen Ice in his first year, stallions like that normally wouldn't get a mare as good as that in that first year. But people are invested in their stallions, and they want to put as many good horses, as mares as they can to their stallions. And so that's a really key thing about how these first crops are so, you know, surprisingly successful, is because breeders and stallion farms really think about it and try to put the best mares they can to those horses in that first year. So he was a beneficiary of that. The other interesting thing is, of course, Brad Kelly, everybody knows, the recruits of billionaire who owns Calumet. He's got a unorthodox game plan of breeding stamina, and stallions he stands are that way. And the idea that he would do a mating that was 3x2 to Smart Strike, that 3x2 is an extremely close inbreeding. This may be the closest inbred Derby winner, but what's interesting is he's also kind of he's a student of the history of Calumet. And of course, Calumet, he's added to that legacy of now breeding the 10th Calumet Derby winner. 8 of those were bred and raced by Calumet. Strike the Gold wasn't, and now this one was claimed off Calumet to become a Derby winner. But here's the interesting thing. As a student of probably of Calumet's history, he's probably gone back and looked at some of these Derby winners from the past, and I've noted this in my article today. For example, Iron Liege was 2x3, inbreeding 2x3 to the Full Brothers Bulldog and Sir Galahad. That's extremely close. Calumet's Derby winner Tim Tam was 3x3 to Bulldog. So, you know, I'm thinking, with absolutely no prior knowledge of this, but just guess, you know, Brad Kelly is probably, as a student of Calumet, he's probably seen some of that and, you know, decided with this 3x2 inbreeding, the Smart Strike. And, you know, it turns out it was quite inspired. It's also not just the 3x2 inbreeding to Smart Strike, but it's 3x2 on the sire line cloth, meaning that the sire and the broodmare sire both trace the same stallion. And that's not usually a very statistically beneficial type of inbreeding. It just so happens that Secret Oath is also inbred on the sire line cross, in her case, the Papiano. So there's some similarities, you know, in the inbreeding of the Oaks winner as well. You know, both the stamina lines of Mr. Prospector and Smart Strike is one, Papiano is another. Conduit, obviously, through Unbridled, who was a Derby winner and got Empire Maker, whose line is responsible for American Pharaoh, Always Dreaming, as well as Unbridled Song, another Papiano sire, quite American, was the sire of Derby winner Real Quiet, who was, by the way, Real Quiet was one of our matings as well. There's you know, some really intriguing parts to this horse's pedigree. Ultimately, just like Keen Knight, he's going to suffer some commercial and getting, you know, you wanted to talk about values and stuff. It's very difficult to promote a stallion, whether it's Keen Ice or his son right now, Rich Strike, that has this type of stamina and running style in its pedigree. You know, another similar type of horse in the sire line. Looking at Lucky, for example, who, by the way, was another horse that we did mating, Preakness winner. Looking at Lucky, he's by Smart Strike as well, just like English Channel and Curlin. Looking at Lucky, of course, is the sire of the Derby winner by DQ, Country House, 65-1. You know, he stands for $7,500 at Derby Dam. It just so happens that Smart Strike is also, by the way, the broodmare sire of Mind That Bird, 50-1 Derby winner. And his half-brother Doohan, who ran third in the Derby, also for Crawford, by the way.
Right.
Another horse, you know, that we had selected for Jerry. These stamina horses, sometimes with too much, they're reflected in the odds, too, aren't they? 80-1 here, 50-1, Mind That Bird, 65-1, Country House. But, you know, occasionally these are the horses that conditions work out in this race, which is such a unique race. And this kind of stuff happens.
It happened. as the connections have all said between yesterday with Rick Dawson or Monday with Eric Reed, they with each passing morning that they're waking up, they're acknowledging that yes, this really did happen. Expand into the value question that came up, Sid. I think you saw the question. Actually, yeah. Dave Goodfriend of all people, Dave was just curious. He thought about what, you know, what Rich Strike would, you know, where he would fit from a stallion standpoint. Now, of course, you know, there's going to be plenty of other racing to come and opportunities to come. But off the top of your head and just at a glance, you know, what kind of a stallion operation would be interested in a horse like this? And you know, as a son of Curlin, and what would you guess he's worth? What would he stand for, even if he were to go to stud?
If you just cut it off at this point, with only the Derby to its credit.
Yeah.
First off, there wouldn't be many that would be interested in him. Of course, Calumet would be extremely interested in him, because not only do they stand the sire, not only did they breed him, but he's got that type of profile that they like, which is, you know, that stamina. And so I would say that, you know, Calumet would be the primary interest holder in this horse. You know, if you look at a horse like Country House, for example, who's at Derby Dan, he stands for $7,500. So if you try to you know, put a value on him right now and say he stands for $7,500. So, you know, say 80 mares at $7,500. What's that? Say 7,500 times 80, $600,000 in stud fees, say the first year, and, you know, and you put a value on it on, say, 2 years worth of stud fees. I mean, you probably put a value on this horse at around $1 million right now, two million, you know, somewhere between $1 million and $2 million max. You have to put a value on the stallion and what any potential buyer of that horse chance to recoup in, you know, the first or second year, because by the time you get to the third and fourth years, you're just not getting any interest. So you got to front load these horses these days. The first year would be the easiest because of, you know, first crop tires phenomenon. Second year, you get something, but, you know, if you're a buyer, I don't think you want to pay, you know, anything more than that right now. And also, you know, he's by Keen Ice. That's going to depress him. You know, it's not like Keen Ice itself was by Curling, you know. I would probably put a, you know, somewhere like $1.2 million. At this point in time.
And obviously, if he was able to, you know, build off of this and add, you know, and add other wins, that's going to enhance it. What does it mean what does it mean immediately, you know, with the season obviously winding down for the most part, what does this mean for Keene Ice? What can Calumet?
Well, they're really not, you know, it's at the point of the year and it's the season where he thought he was 7,500 to begin with. And anybody greeting now would have to be getting a big discount from Stutzy to begin with. I don't think you're going to get a big run on him for breeding purposes. So I don't think it's going to really bump his Stutzy out. You know, there's one area where they could get more, maybe in the 2 to 3 million range for this horse, is Japan. Japanese love American Derby winners, and they're more than likely to double any domestic offer. So you know, it's conceivable that the Japanese interest could pump the price up somewhat. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's chapters to be written yet, obviously, for Rich Strike, and the most immediate potentially, of course, at Baltimore with the Preakness. Sid, I want to get to the other two stories, and both passings, one Human and one Equine. Let's appreciate Flatter, and I don't know how much time you've had a chance. You know, I know you're writing your column probably yesterday, but boy, there was a moving response to Flatter's passing.
Well, Flatter, first off, Flatter is an extremely well-bred horse by AP Indiana Praise. He's the type of horse that he won 4 out of 6 starts. He's a full brother to Congrats, who was a stakes winner. But Flatter wasn't. He was a stakes place horse, graded stakes place horse, winner of 4 out of 6 starts. But it's interesting because Crayburn, you know, their horse that put him to stud, he's the type of horse, that they'll take a chance on. You know, they'll take a chance on horses that aren't stakes winners. Drone, Danzig, you know, Flatter, off the top of my head. He went to stud for $5,000, which is incredible, and worked his way up. Very, very good, solid Italian, both for owner breeders as well as for the commercial marketplace. We've always been fans of him. In fact, one of our recommendations was West Coast, his, you know, champion son for the West. And so he's got sons at stud, upstart, obviously, this year with Zandon, Kathleen O, sharing him that sold for $450,000. He's a rising star. So he's, and West Coast will have his runners this year. So it's, he's an influential horse. And by the way, this will tie in actually a bit to the Human that we're going to speak of. But Flatter, terrific pedigree that's been touched by so many great breeders, from Paul Millen to Ogden Phipps, Claiborne, goes back to Lac Troyenne, who was the great foundation mare, Marcel Boussac mare, that Colonel Bradley of Idlehour Stock Farm purchased and brought here, and became so influential in the stud book. And Flatter traces to La Troyenne. Now, what's really interesting about the Idlehour and Bradley mares, when he died And actually, even before he died, but when he did die, Eidelauer sold a package of some of these top mares, all tracing to La Troyenne, to a group that included, actually, a group that only included Ogden Phipps, Jock Whitney of Green Tree, and Robert Kleberg of King Ranch. The three of them purchased a lot of these Eidelauer mares and they've had incredible success with these lines through the years. The Phipps is, of course, you know, probably had the greatest success of it, but part of that legacy was the Eidelauer legacy was part of the breeding history of the Phippses, King Ranch, and Green Tree, and the land of Eidelauer. Also, King Ranch got one portion of that farm as well. I want to say, and this I have no idea, and maybe a listener or somebody who knows about this might be able to say if this is true or not, but, you know, Darby Dan, I know for a fact, is on part of the Eidelauer land. And the King Ranch part, I'm just guessing, might be part of Middlebrook, which is Helen Alexander's ranch farm. And, of course, Helen Alexander is the daughter of Helen Groves, who passed away recently. And she, of course, was the only daughter of Robert Kleberg, who owned King Ranch.
Well, and that is the companion conversation, too, with Helen Groves passing on Friday in San Antonio. And just a life around equine sport, not limited either to thoroughbreds and thoroughbred racing, but and I'm just noticing also services next Tuesday, First Presbyterian in San Antonio, and in lieu of flowers, the family's asking donations to Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation. Grayson-jockeyclub.org, of course, or the National Sporting Library, nationalsporting.org. It's always intriguing, Sid, and we've touched on any number of families that, you know, some continue and others don't. You think about W.T. Young and you know, Overbrook kind of coming to an end. Phipps family seemingly going on with it, even if it's in a smaller capacity. But you know, to be the only daughter of Robert Kleberg and to continue things for decades after after his passing, it's very, very notable. And I mean, she obviously. Real savvy in her own right.
Yeah, she's not only was she savvy in her own right, but her daughters were extremely savvy as well, and became notable breeders as well. And there's a tie-in to the Derby winner because Robert Kleberg, one of his great purchases. Was the Epsom Oaks winner, I think it was early 60s Epsom Oaks winner, Monade, okay, that he imported. And Monade is a terrific ancestor, a broodmare, a blue hen. And this female line of Monet through, you know, five or six generations uninterrupted, ranch of red mares from Monet. And it just so happens that Keen Ice, sire of the Derby winner, his entire female line traces to Monet. And I think his first four dams were bred by Emery Hamilton, who's a daughter of Helen Grove and is the sister to Helen Alexander. So I think if you look at the female line, I don't have it in front of me, but if you look at the female line of Keen Ice, I think you find that it's all bred by Emery Hamilton, and then it goes King Ranch, and then it goes in the King Ranch imported Monet. So you know how things always seem to tie in whenever we're talking about stuff, and boy, does this tie in, because that legacy is very much in the female line of the sire of the Derby winner. And of course, you know, King Ranch itself is responsible for a Salt, a Triple Crown winner.
And we're reminded regularly at this time of year, Bill Hirsch sends out Bill sends out those, I don't know if you're on the mailing list, Sid, but Bill Hirsch sends out the reminders on a regular basis about Assault.
Bill has called me a few times too. Yeah, he's always got some interesting stories.
Oh, listen, he's had a front row seat between him and Mary. Front row seat to a lot of the game's history. Obviously. Yeah. Well, it certainly has been a chock full, you know, between yesterday's news with Flatter and then I saw about Mrs. Groves, and you just have to put them all together, but let you riff. And we recommend that everybody just send the link out, actually, Sid, of this week's Taking Stock, which obviously weaves together, you know, quite a bit of what we've just talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I appreciate that.
Well, we'll gear up. I'll talk to you from Baltimore next week.
Sounds good. We'll have a chat next week, and we'll see what the season has in store for us.
Well, and I imagine that Team Rich Strike is they're going to try to enhance his value a week from Saturday in Baltimore. As well, and actually, we're waiting to, you know, I thought Rick Dawson was interesting yesterday. They were being cautious about they fully expect to be there, but they also want to let the horse you know, get back out on the racetrack, and all signs very positive, and we've already got simplification. It's already bedded down in the stakes barn at Pimlico, ready to go.
Right,
looking forward. I'm starting to look forward to getting to Baltimore. Thanks, Sid.
All right, you got it, Steve. Talk to you next week.
Sid Fernando, folks, and Sire Watch Pedigree Folk is brought to you by Hill and Dale and Kerwin. And it actually was a wonderful weekend for Hill and Dale with McLean's Music, of course, and Jackie's Warrior. That was one of them. And Kitten's Joy got a new that New Year's Eve. That's another new stake winner. And there were others too. Curlin himself, Cody's Wish, continues to flex his muscles. And as we said with Andy yesterday, just Bill Mott with a real full hand. There was somebody else too, I thought, that caught my eye from one of the Hill and Dale. Oh, Obligatory. There you go. Curling, another curling. So two. two Krillin steak links. We're going to get ready for the top of the hour. We got about 15 minutes, and John Dooley's going to join us. We'll dive into Indiana momentarily, and then right at 11, we'll be joined as the news release comes out for the Hall of Fame class of 2022. And I've been toting around all of the information from the Hall of Fame, and now I'm going to have to, I had it with me the entire time I was away for 3 weeks, and I kept, I kept kind of moving it around. And now when I'm going to need it, right, I'm going to have to figure out where I put it. So I will do that at the same time as we talk to John. And John Dooley back with us after a Derby week absence. John, good morning.
Good morning. Looking forward to our live racing program. And, of course, after talking about the Kentucky Derby 148, and of course, Rip Strike pulling off the improbable upset at 80-1.
What were your Derby weekend impressions?
Well, you know, I had hoped that a horse that had raced at the Fairgrounds, but that this winter would win the Kentucky Derby. I thought
sure.
Epicenter. But the fact that Rip Strike, raced in the Gunrunner Stakes, that inaugural running of the Gunrunner Stakes that Epicenter won, before taking off with the $1 million Louisiana Derby heading into Louisville. But, Sonny Leone, Eric Reed, congratulations to them, and Rich Strike, Derby champions.
Well, and you bring up a good point about that gun runner, that counts. There's a lot of people, I think, that are gonna do a George Washington slept here, except, Rich Strike, a Derby winner strode through here at one point or another, right?
Well, the great thing was, they actually designed it, it was the inaugural running of the Gunrunners,
right?
So, Scott Jones and Jason Belay, the team there at Fairgrounds, put a juvenile stake in it, at the end of the season. Draw in a horse like, Epicenter. And, of course, Epicenter came up with the goods that day. But, got a horse like Rich Strike in town that maybe otherwise wouldn't have come through New Orleans, per se, at the end of, late into his juvenile campaign. And of course, I've always enjoyed the, Louisiana road to the Kentucky Derby. And after Mandaloon and Country House, came through our way, a few years back. So, I think it was a terrific winter for, fairground-based horses, whether it was Keeneland Spring or Santeen. I love the Munez Memorial year in and year out.
That's right.
It's on the undercard, but, it's produced so many great winners. My screensaver at the announcer booth here at Horse Indianapolis is the Brixton Motor by a Nose, the Munez Memorial. And if not for that nose, there goes the undefeated, Horse of the Year campaign. So that Munez Memorial Stakes, one of my favorites all season down left during winter.
Well, we were kind of focused on what was happening in Louisville last week, and the last couple of days even, continue to kind of recap. We got about 10 minutes or so, John, to quickly look at really the last 2 weeks since we spoke last, bring us up to speed. We now have got basically, three calendar weeks in, and now starting to get into the regular rotation of Monday through Thursday.
Yeah, we're starting to get a couple, a few more two-turn races. But today a pretty cool day. It's our first turf races of the season. We have a couple of races, on the turf course here, rated good. During some of the dark days, we took some heavy rains, and, Eric Hallstrom was talking with the general manager of BPR Racing here, Eric Hallstrom, and, he walked the course. I thought maybe we would be on, yesterday morning, but it was still took a lot of moisture during the dark days. Of course, fans don't get to see what happens when you're not racing, but then the signal comes up, and it's, sunny, fast, and, upper 70s and 80s wire and draw on the turf course. But luckily, it's dried out enough. We get on there today, and it's rated good, a fast-paced track, and a couple of juvenile sprint races, our first juvenile races of the season at Horseshoe Indianapolis. So, you know, a lot to look forward to for us. And I think, you know, good size fields. That 50 cent pick five, 11.99% takeouts. That's good for the bettors. And, you know, we have a straight fire six jackpot that starts in the third. It's up over $5,400, races three through eight for the straight fire six jackpot.
You mentioned the baby races, and today the first card starts at 2:30, and I'm just reaching for my let me grab the there it is. There's some fun elements of this. Right off the bat, you've got this six horse group going four and a half, John, and the one horse, James Chapman, has got a horse that he owns in partnership, the Three Chimneys Bred Prove Right, the Justify Colt. And if I'm not mistaken, I think this is, isn't this the first Justify to run?
I mean, you know, maybe you know better better than that with me, but, you know, we're excited to see, you know, Big Colt by Justify, of course, and, you know, gets the rail draw. Roddy Prescott, a three-time riding champion here at the Horseshoe Indianapolis. I mean, some great starts. So, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk, of course, with all the, you know, Kentucky Derby week and, you know, Derby 148. But, you know, Rodney's off to a terrific start here. Marcelino Pedroza Jr., Joe Ramos, teaming with Randy Cobb, Eddie Perez, Bob Gorham, and Edgar Morales has also, you know, been on fire, winning kind of at over a 27% clip. But you get the, you know, top-notch jockey, rail draw. You know, it's always, you know, you start off these juvenile races, and of course, you know, like me and a lot of handicappers, you zero in, okay, who started Akima? You know, who has that first run, you know, Keeneland under his or her belt? And, you know, that's the case with the five, you know, Refio's Baytown, and you get Joe Ramos mentioned. He's riding really great here. And, you know, James Chapman has the outside horse, too. And, you know, that horse, Amira Wins, already a second-time starter, having already debuted at Park.
Well, in fact, based on what I can, what I'm seeing, this is going to be the first start of a Justify progeny. And in addition, you're looking at the second start, same horse, but the second start for Always Dreaming. This is Amira Wins, also Jim Chapman. And Good Samaritan has got Huntertown for Ray Hernandez. And this is a, this colt is working sharp. Owned by Roger McDaniel, bred by Derby Lane Farm out of a proud citizen mare, and this is Good Samaritan's first runner.
Yeah, and a lot of people are talking here about Huntertown, too, and of course, he was made the 2-1 morning line favorite, so, you know, the morning line odds maker is zeroing in on the, you know, Good Samaritan colt on debut. We're talking about Huntertown, and as I mentioned, I mean, Edgar Morales has just been riding like lights out here, especially, you know, in the route race. He's been dominating the routes. In fact, he did a winner yesterday for Tom Amos with an $800,000 Keeneland yearling buy in 2019, Curlin filly by the name of Richebourg. And Tom was in town yesterday, so Tom Saddlebat winner teamed up with Edgar Morales, who's been riding really great here, and he's on Huntertown in the open.
The third race is the other maiden two-year-old group, and this group, looking down, we're talking about, well, let's see, you've got Good Magic, the Good Magic baby, filly for Eduardo Caramari, Araya, and this may be Good Magic's first starter.
Yeah, I mean, looking for, you know, this horse on debut, and a kind of a versus the boys, you know, in the opener that at least a couple of the horses have, you know, start under their belt. A lot of these gals, you know, making their debut. Tia Frida, a couple of starts, you know, Keeneland, but didn't show much, but has the rail draw, you know, 12 to 1 on the morning line. Maybe she'll need to, you know, step it up from the rail draw, but, you know, maybe mine, Shay My Name debuts. I mean, you have Rodney, you know, Prescott on board. She's been working, you know, well enough to be a nice one by Mastery. We had a Brad Cox Mastery win here the other day. So, you know, kind of keeping my eyes on the tote board for Shame My Name with Rodney Prescott.
There's a California Chrome, Sea Chrome for Aaron West. And here's, for those of you that are pottery collectors, Rookwood comes back for John Langemeyer. And just looking for, you know, I always say at this time of year, although now we're into May, more so than Keeneland, after Keeneland ends, you rarely see big siblings in these early season two-year-old races. But occasionally, you know, occasionally you'll see some stake-winning siblings when you're trying to look for some hints from these babies. But two races today, the first and the third, 2:30 and 3:32. The first and the third, boys first, the girls second. You've got the first starters for some very prominent sires, Justify, Good Samaritan, and then Good Magic in the third. Let's look at the meat of the card. Open company, first level allowance, starts the pick five, John, six furlong group of boys.
Yeah, and yesterday paid over, by the way, props to our racing analyst, Brian Aragone, at Mr. B Analyst on Twitter. Had a nice pick five ticket yesterday that paid over $600. So nice. Kudos to Brian to nail that. Yeah, and you mentioned it starts on the fifth race, you know, the fast main track, and through that sequence, you know, a couple of races on the, you know, Horseshoe Indianapolis turf course, you know, rated good. So good news that we're getting our first, you know, turf races of the season in. And I mentioned, you know, Tom Amos, he had a winner on yesterday's card with that Rich Yearling purchase yesterday. But he has a Wild for Wycliffe in here. And I had a chance to watch, you know, Rene Diaz rode all winter down at the fairgrounds. And, of course, Rene made inroads, you know, the Tom Amos stable. James Graham also, you know, for so many years, you know, our champion down there at the fairgrounds. James has a lot of those Tom Amos rides. Calls, you know, locked up, but here comes apprentice Rene Diaz, his agent, you know, Super Santos Inc., you know, Jose Santos, you know, Junior, you know, or Santos Inc. getting Rene on a lot of rides with Tom Amos, and Rene's made the trip here during the, you know, Kentucky dark days, you know, racing Monday through Thursday now here at Horseshoe Indianapolis, and, you know, like this combination, you know, Wild for Wycliffe and the Royal Blue and Mime Smash of Otter Maggie Moss.
Very nice. The sixth race, you mentioned turf, and here's a turf mile. And I guess I can drop Resurrection Road out of here, the MTO. This is a group, it's a nice nice field, actually. And just kind of thumbing through, pretty much everybody's had an opportunity, it seems. Fireside Kitten, though, on the rail. She's coming back for a seasonal debut for Kim Hammond. And Kim with her main go-to, Sammy Bermudez. How about Queen of the Green? Third start of the season already for Kelsey Danner. Started the year at Gulfstream, went to Keeneland. Has been beaten, but actually has not run terrible, Queen of the Green. And so she's 7-2. In this spot, and Contreras with Manny Esquivel coming off a win at Oaklawn and moving to the grass with Guana K, the Air Force Blue filly. This is a fun group.
Yeah, and that sixth race starts off the late pick four again. Turf good, you know, the mile. Marcelino Pedroza Jr., you know, three-time champion here. He's off to a fast start in 2022, especially riding for Brad Cox. They had that mastery filly winner the other day. You know, a maiden win, but, you know, she's the speed, but the speed hold on a good turf course here at Horseshoe Indianapolis. It'll be new for me, too, you know, to take in, you know, the pace factors and where the winners are coming from on the turf course here. But I thought Adam is, you know, filly this Almadrina. She's got Edgar Morales, who, as I mentioned, not only winning on the dirt track, but round two turns, winning at a high percentage here, Edgar Morales. And this, you know, filly last year, she won over in England. She was bred there and, you know, has run here in the States, but has run a couple times at you know, got a turf way on the synthetic and then faced certainly tougher on Keeneland's turf course. So against this group here, 12-1 in the morning line, kind of like Edgar Morales teaming with Anna Mio with Almadrina.
Look at you. Nice. Rest of the sequence, the seventh, kind of a murky bunch of state-bred boys going 5.5. Got some firsters to consider. And those that have run appear, you know, just kind of modest. Randy Klopp actually has got a two in here that they're making debuts. Hitchpin, the two, and Doro's Wish, as well, the nine. And Glyshaw with one, Giaponte Colt, Vortex Rising.
Yeah, and of course, Giaponte, a past winner of the Arlington Million, so always remember that moment when Gio Ponti won up in Chicago. But, you know, sometimes I don't want to overthink this too much. I mean, it's hard to win from those outside posts in our, you know, sprints here at the Horseshoe Indianapolis. We're going to sprint heavy to start the meet, but maiden sprinters here. I thought, you know what, maybe it's as simple as, you know, Rene Diaz and Tom Amos outside, you know, yeah, that outside exaggerator called, you know, on the radar. I mean, you know, I really like the way Rene rides. And maybe this horse gets position, and you know, it might be lights out for the maiden sprinters in the seventh.
Open company on the turf, actually, maiden special weight, and this one I've got to do a little bit of pedigree work. But Brad Cox, always scary. He's got a Violence Colt, Fierce Assault, the 8 at 4-1 with Pedroza. You've got first timer for Scooter Hughes, Miracle on Ice, 12-1. A Bo Hirsch bred dialed in colt, and I suppose the second timer might deserve 10-1 with Chelsea Bailey for Bob Sturgeon. Floyd G a little interesting, and showed speed. I won't say showed speed, but you know, coming out of a 5.5, so may have some speed that's lurking in there.
Yeah, and actually, you know, we got a great group of apprentices, by the way, Steve, you know, here this season. Andrea Rodriguez, you know, she's back. She rode well here last season. Lindsay Hebert, and, you know, Chelsea Bailey, I talked to her at the end of you know, the season up in Chicago last year. She mentioned about going to Oakland, but she had plans to ride here at Horseshoe Indianapolis. So the apprentice ranks are swelling here at Horseshoe Indianapolis on a humid, swelling, heat day.
Things close out in the ninth with a 5.5. This is a second lifetime allowance for Indiana-bred males. And this is a nice group, actually, here, too. Got a few seasonal debuters, of course, to wade through.
Yeah, and, you know, actually, one of those that have started this year, Marvin Johnson off to a, you know, great start. If you look at his statistics, you know, three wins, you know, high in the money percentage for Marvin Johnson, and Samuel Bermudez riding the outside horse, you know, I mean, off a Tampa claim. I mean, see how this horse fares in the sprint there. But as you mentioned, we're getting horses that are just kind of getting back onto the track for 2022. And, you know, among those, you know, Faithful Notion with Eddie Perez riding for Bob Gorham. They won the opener here yesterday, so they've made a good team so far this meet. But maybe I'll take that horse that has a, you know, run under his belt this year, Over the Top Justice, to overcome that outside draw.
John Dooley, everybody, and back at it today at Indy, and nice group of races, and the late pick five starts in the fifth with open company allowance, and the pick five goes 8 by 12 by 12 by 10 by 10. Robust sequence. The late pick four starts in race six. So, John, I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you from Baltimore next week.
Yeah, look forward to it. Have a great time. Tell my my longtime friend Dave Rodman, hello, the voice of the Preakness Stakes. So we'll look forward to the Preakness and to your coverage there. All besties.
I appreciate it. John Dooley, everybody. Cheers. We're going to stay here for one quick segment because Brian Bouye, ready to announce your Hall of Famers. And let me, Case, I think usually, yeah, you got to call his office instead of the cell. That's always, because it's a brick. It's like a pillbox over there at the museum. So we're going to have John join, we're going to have Brian join us here in a minute, and I'm not going to, I don't want to reveal anything myself, but actually let me at least read the release that he just sent, and we will, there it is, there, I said, I just sent it, and we will see the whole list that he's going to actually, there, instead of tiered releases, they're going to announce all the inductees, whether they're contemporary, the pillars of the turf, and you know, some of the legacy candidate types. So instead of you know, staggered the way they have in the past, but
we can tell you it seems like it's another narrow band of inductees. We'll see what I now know, but I don't want to reveal anything. All right.
I suppose I can.
Well, there we go. I think we've got Brian Bouye now. Brian Bouye of the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame, and for many years this announcement would come during the Derby lead-up, but with Derby in the rearview mirror, you've got the stage, Brian, and the hall gets to have a lot of the focus as you announce new Hall of Famers. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How's everything?
Excellent, excellent. And I've been holding off. I've been waiting for you. I want you to have the honors to announce who has been elected to the Hall of Fame.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me. We have 8 new inductees that are going to be enshrined on August 5th here in Saratoga. We have 2 in the contemporary category, Champion Racehorses, Beholder and Teppan. We have 3 historic review candidates that are going in, Hillsdale, who raced in the 1950s, Royal Heroine, who was the first Breeders' Cup mile winner, trainer Oscar White, and we have 3 pillars of the turf, James Cox Brady, Marshall Cassidy, and James Ben Ali Hagen.
Wow. So once again, let's start with the contemporary, and we'll discuss this with Jay Pridman at the bottom of the hour. Jay, part of the nominating committee and involved in all the process. For a reminder, Corey Nakatani, Christophe Clement, Doug O'Neill, John Sheriffs were the humans that were up for potential election on the horse front. Beholder, Blind Luck, Hob de Gras, Kona Gold, who continues to be turned away, Rags to Riches, and Teppan. So just the 2 equine, and not just the 2 equine, only 2 equine. And it seems like we're into a pattern on this a little bit, Brian.
Yeah, you know, our policy is, you know, the voters have to, it's to get elected, it's 50% plus 1 vote, so it's a majority vote needed. Some of the others, you know, with the Hall of Fame does not release vote totals at this time, but there were some others that were very close this year once again. But Beholder and Teppan were the only 2 that got the vote this year to get in on the contemporary side.
Well, and of course, we'll talk probably to Richard Mandela tomorrow, and people from Spendthrift, and Beholder was a guarantee slam dunk. Teppan as well, and there's actually a lot of harmony between the 2, Beholder and Teppan.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know, when you look at the accomplishments there, I don't think either of these are surprises. I mean, you've got Beholder, who won 18 of 26, you know, a 4-time Eclipse Award winner of 3 Breeders' Cup races, only 1 of 2 horses to do that, Golda Kova being the other. You know, she beat males in the Pacific Classic. She won a Grade 1 every year from ages 2 through 6, which is just simply remarkable. And then you look at what Teppan did. You know, she was a champion as well. Won Breeders' Cup, won internationally up at Woodbine, had a Group 1 at the Royal Ascot and the Queen Anne. You know, both these horses defeated males. They both won, you know, double digits in graded stakes. So they're absolutely spectacular horses, and I don't think anybody's surprised. Both first-year eligibles as well.
Exactly. Yeah, 13 of 23 for Teppan for $4.4 million, and 18 of 26 with 6 seconds for $6.1 million. So congratulations to Pat Masterson and Mark Cassie. Of course, the Brogdons, everybody at Macmer Hall, Lou Bretter, and for Beholder, same thing. Really, these are, we just lost Leslie's Lady, right?
Yeah.
In the last got to be 3 months or so, right?
I would
think
so, yeah.
Maybe?
Yep.
Yeah. So, well,
I will save the other portion of the conversation for Jay when he joins us at the bottom of the hour.
Sure.
I mean, the one that continues to be inexplicable is Kona Gold. It just doesn't make any sense.
Well, I can't speak for the voters, but, you know, I know that there's a lot of people out there that, you know, I mean, the nominating committee puts these candidates out there because they believe that they're strongly worthy of consideration, you know, and everybody, you know, it's a great debate every year, who belongs, who doesn't, why are this one get voted in, why this one didn't, and, you know, that's what the Hall of Fame's about in a lot of sports, and these debates, and, you know, everybody's got their candidates that they think belong, and it's tough. You know, to get into the Hall of Fame is the highest honor in the sport, and it's very difficult. But I think we're really excited about those two on the contemporary side, and the historic review ones are really cool selections. You know, Hillsdale has been on that list for historic review for quite some time, and interestingly enough, this is the first Indiana bred to get into the Hall of Fame. So, you know, a great story there. You know, Hillsdale won 23 of 41 starts. You know, was absolutely spectacular as a handicapper in 1959, winning 10 stakes, you know, beating the likes of Round Table and Bald Eagle. Royal Heroine winning the first Breeders' Cup mile and setting a North American record on turf, winning internationally. So some great stuff there. Oscar White, who trained for the Jeffords family for over 40 years, won over 100 stakes races, multiple wins in the Belmont, the Travers, the Alabama. So we're really excited about this group. And then the Pillars of the Turf are just... you know, they're impeccable candidates. So James Cox Brady and Marshall Cassidy and James Benally Hagan, I mean, these are names that have, you know, resonated through the years, and, you know, we're really excited about this class.
And some very, the historic side, very notable names, and this will be particularly, as you mentioned, Hillsdale, you'll light them up in Indiana. They'll be excited, and of course, just finished a visit with John Dooley talking about Horseshoe, Indiana. This is going to excite them a lot, the Indiana.
Yeah, and I had a talk a couple days ago with Pat McDonough. He's a photographer for the Louisville Courier Journal, and he actually wrote a story a couple weeks back about Hillsdale, because his uncle was the trainer for you know, after his career started. Martin Fallon Jr. is the uncle of the photographer from the Louisville Courier Journal, who wrote a nice piece about his legacy. So there's a lot of people excited about this.
Always a feature and a highlight every year, and announcing the Hall of Famers and Beholder and Tepin about as nice a pair of bookends to go in, and lots of living people that will be on hand. Certainly remind everybody of the ceremony and their opportunity. I mean, you're talking about two horses that had huge followings, that have huge followings. I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to want to attend.
Oh, absolutely. Friday, August 5th, right here in Saratoga Springs at the Fasig Tipton Pavilion. The ceremony is at 10:30 in the morning. Tom Durkin will once again serve as the master of ceremonies. A lot of the Hall of Famers return, you know, to be recognized at the ceremony. It's always a great event. We have wonderful production. Our friends at Keeneland do some amazing video production for us to really make this a wonderful ceremony. And we're really looking forward to it. It's free to attend. You know, the doors will open an hour before the ceremony, and, you know, we always have a great crowd on hand for the event. And, you know, if you're not in the area or you're not able to, you know, make it to the ceremony, we do show it on our website at racingmuseum.org.
Brian Bouye, everybody, and the National Museum of Racing and Hall of Fame, and remodeled and refashioned and a must-visit on part of your trips to Saratoga. Brian, I appreciate it.
Steve, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Brian Bouye, everybody. There it is. Hall of Fame, Beholder and Tepin. Let's take a break right here, our second of the morning. And when we come back, Seth Merrow for a few minutes. And we'll get Seth's Derby recapping before Jay Pribman takes us to noon today. And he'll cover both these pieces of news from the Hall, and he and I will undoubtedly both agree that Kona Gold just continues to be ignored for no good reason. It's bizarre. Back after this, at the races, SiriusXM.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick.
Family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands in Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan, Osler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the foaling barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at countrylifefarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeder.
Horsefin, nominate now for the $400,000 Grade II Penn Mile and the $150,000 Penn Elks. Both races will be run Friday, June 3rd, each at 1 mile on the grass at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Nominations close Wednesday, May 18th. Contact the Penn National Racing Office at 1-800-233-8238. That's 1-800-233-8238. Or go to hollywoodpnrc.com/racing.
Want to get your career in horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Leader Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.